It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And thank you very much for joining me on the first Sunday in March. We've now put 2 months of winter behind us, and depending on where you're listening, it either hasn't been very bad or it's been very wet. My guest this morning is Jason Meyer, who is a longtime resident of the state of Idaho, and his family actually goes back to the earliest days in Idaho. And why we're going west today is in part because of all the discussions going on regarding the president's budget and cutbacks in conservation. And I thought it would be helpful to have an individual who spent his life not only flying much of the West, but flying remote areas, who's in the hunting business and the fishing business and has lived his life outdoors, kind of give a color on, because so much of the federal budget for conservation is spent in the Western states, just talking about some of the things that are going on, and then I have a few thoughts on maybe why we don't need maybe all the money that people think we need. So, Jason, thanks for being with me this morning. I sure appreciate your coming on the air. And I got to know you a few years ago, and we spent a lot of time in the outdoors ever since. And, Jason, I guess my first question for you is, you've grown up in Idaho. You've seen a lot of evolution in wildlife in Idaho. What, today, as you look at birds and big game in Idaho, how have things changed through the years?
Well, as far as big game, I've seen the numbers decline. As far as bighorn sheep, deer, in some units, due to winter and increase in predators, of course. Like the elk are doing real well, the larger animals, depending on the unit you're in. Out south, Clay County, we're pretty good. But you get north of the interstate where the wolves have been introduced, the numbers have really dwindled. But they've since opened a wolf hunt, and, you know, they're still on the uprise, but not as much as they were.
When wolves were introduced.
Go ahead, Charlie.
When wolves were introduced to Idaho, was it a very controversial step? And how do you think that people feel about it now, a number of years later?
Well, I think they all feel the same, but they're happy that they are trying to manage them now. Fish and Game has fought with the federal government on having a season, and they finally got their way. And the hunters are happy, but they're not happy that they introduced them in the first place.
So there was a lot of animosity.
They never wanted it. So go ahead, Charlie.
So there was a lot of animosity across the West. I was actually living in Montana at the time when the reintroduction took place, and it was very heated. And one of the things that happened in many Western states, and you just alluded to it, and I wonder where things are, you know, in Idaho, when they reintroduced the wolves, they really didn't have a management plan, and then the populations exploded, and not only did ranchers have a lot of issues, but certainly big game hunters had a lot of issues. And then the next thing you knew, the Fish and Game Department had issues because they didn't have as many permits to issue for hunters, and that cost them the money and all kinds of things. So in Idaho, you mentioned that there's now a season, but with that, wasn't there a court battle to get that passed? It wasn't just a decision on the part of the state, right?
They fought that tooth and nail to get that. To get that wolf season. And now, you know, everybody's buying tags, and they can buy more than one tag, I believe.
So if you want to hunt wolves in the West, it's a tag system now. And how, Jason, one of the species that us flatlanders from the Midwest never thought we'd see in our lifetime was the return of the cougar or mountain lion. Throughout the West, we hear all kinds of stories about the advances of mountain lions. What do you think that is doing to the big game herd populations?
As far as bighorn sheep, I think they're really affecting the bighorn sheep. For instance, in the late 80s, on Deep Creek in Hawaii County, there was roughly 1,300 head. And now the most I've counted in that unit or in that area where those numbers were, I just told you there were I've counted from 45 to 47. And they've watched, you know, I've flown that area, I've hiked that area, and I can't hike that area without finding a kill or, you know, scat, you know, sign of mountain lions in their tracks in the creek bottoms. And so they've also made it wilderness, so the hunters won't go in there because they have to go an extra couple miles into wilderness in the wintertime. And so they won't hunt that country because it's too far. And it's way out there anyway. But yes, the numbers of mountain lions is way up. Because in, you know, back in 06, 04, somewhere along that time, they stopped the mountain lion hunting. And now they've realized that they have a problem. And now there's no quota on females in that unit. So, and you can use a electronic call, whereas other units you've got to use a hand call for mountain lion. I believe it's still that way.
We're visiting with Jason Meyer, who's a lifelong outdoorsman and pilot in Idaho, and his family's been here for many generations. And Jason, we're going to go to a quick break, and when I come back, I'd like to talk about two things. First of all, the sage-grouse situation, which is not very good, and maybe get your thoughts as to why that is. And I know you're in touch with ranchers and hunters and people all across the state as to what's going on and maybe how that differs with what the folks in Washington is going on. And then also I would love to get your thoughts on the management of public lands in the West in general, because so many of us don't even think about the amount of public lands we have and the hunting opportunity it provides. And as part of the budget in Congress right now, there's a big discussion as to how much should be spent on them. And from the point of view of a sportsman in the West, I'd love to get your thoughts. We're visiting with Jason Meyer. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you're enjoying the show on this first Sunday of March. I'm visiting with Jason Meyer, who lives in a remote area of Idaho, who spends a lot of time in the outdoors interacting with hunters. And I thought it would be an interesting show this morning from the point of view of the whole discussion of what's taking place with the predator-prey relationship in the West. And at the end, I'm going to tie it back to the president's budget. But Jason, let me ask you, sage grouse are indigenous to the West. You read about the pioneers and the settlers. They were a staple, and for many, many years until recently, they were a really abundant bird. And now across the West, their numbers have crashed. What do you think is really causing that population crash?
I think it's a combination of everything, Charlie. Many things. We've had some fires, several fires come through and wipe out habitat. We've had West Nile several years ago knocked out a lot of sage grouse, more so closer to the wet areas, like Big Springs out south of us. It's got huge meadows with stagnant water. Perfect breeding ground for mosquitoes and predators. And also, my cousin was talking about, he's a rancher out there, and he said these wet springs are causing the hatches to die off. And the reason so, the cold and wet, it's hard on those chicks. And also he brought up the fact that it also throws off, when it's cold and wet, they don't have, you know, most of their diet is insects. So that throws off the cycle, their food cycle, when it's cold and wet. You don't have as many insects, you know, they can eat. So that's kind of what I think.
So what about, has the predator community changed much over the years that would play a role in this? In some parts of the country, certainly it has. In your sense, for sage grouse, has that had any impact with the increase in raptors, which have certainly increased exponentially across all of America?
Yeah, we're seeing a huge increase of raptors, you know. And, you know, the coyote numbers, they're staying about the same. They're up and down. But for the most part, I would say it would be, if it was a predator, it would be raptors, especially on our pheasants and our quail. We used to have a lot of pheasants in Grandview, our area, and you can't hardly find one anymore, you know. They should be a snake, well, not a raptor.
Well, they, in the Midwest, some of the finest pheasant hunting in all of the continent used to take place, Jason, and today, as you just said, a lot of places people don't even know what a pheasant looks like. And we're visiting with Jason Meyer, who's longtime resident of Idaho and spends a lot of his time in the outdoors. And Jason, here's where I was kind of headed with the sage grouse question. In the president's budget and previous budgets, particularly by Congress, there is literally an expenditure of hundreds of millions of dollars to try to bring back the sage grouse. And when I asked you what farmers and ranchers and hunters think are the problem, people who are outside every day, you gave a sort of a variety of reasons. It's never one thing. And not one of those reasons matches up with what the folks in Washington, D.C. think is the problem. And they are looking to spend just hundreds of millions of dollars on trying to create habitat for the sage grouse and protect areas that have not changed in the past 100 years. So when you hear about the sage grouse potentially being put on the endangered species list, it's been talked about, what would that mean if the sage grouse were put on the endangered species list, say, in a state like Idaho?
Well, first off, you got to realize the problem, and you can't realize the problem from Washington. You need to get out in the field and talk to the people that are out there. And so, is what I'm saying is the ranchers are out there day in and day out, most all year long. They will tell you what the problem is. You know, they like to see those birds too. And people just need to understand and listen to those people and not try to do it from an office in Washington.
So if the Endangered Species Act were to kick in, and right now it's, as you know, it's being discussed, how would that affect the use of lands in the West and in Idaho in particular, if sage grouse were listed as an endangered species? Would that have a pretty significant impact on what not only you could do as a sportsman, but what ranchers could do?
Charlie, I don't really know what they're going to do there. I haven't read up on it, and I do not know. I don't have an answer for you on that.
Well, I appreciate your candor, Jason. So, if the issue with plummeting sage grouse populations has been, as you described it, a combination of everything from wet and cold springs to lack of insects to fires, and everyone on the continent certainly is aware of the huge fires that have taken place in the West in recent years, and a lot of that is just due to areas not having burned for a long time. What would bring the sage grouse back the quickest, do you think? We got about a minute or so to go. What do you think would bring one of these iconic birds back the fastest if something could happen?
I would start with controlling the hunts. Back off on the hunts, and I would manage your predators, and that's about all you can do.
And is there, what I'm not aware right now of, any of the plans for managing sage grouse, any of them to consider predator management of any kind? It's in fact, that word isn't even mentioned as far as I've seen, which again goes to show if the local game and fish agencies and the ranchers and the sportsmen were brought into the equation, the people who are out every day, they might have a very different solution than those people sitting, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, but sitting behind computers who don't have any idea what's really taking place on the land.
Yeah, they need to get out and study for themselves and see for themselves what's actually going on, you know. That's just
that could be said about a lot of things. So, Jason, I thank you very much for being with us this morning. I know Idaho's a long way from the studio here in Chicago, but the issues you're talking about and dealing with have an impact on all of us who like to enjoy from time to time the West. And thank you very much for taking time out of your morning to be with us. And for all of you listening, thank you very much for listening to The Great Outdoors Show. I'll be back with much more on The Great Outdoors next week. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.